number of new clinical research efforts in lung cancer include or focus on radiation therapy, and I met with Dr. Ritsuko Kamaki for an update. To help illustrate the changes in the field, Dr. Kamaki presented several patients from her practice, beginning with a 76-year-old man who had a left lower lobectomy for T2N0M0 squamous cell carcinoma in July 2002, with a complicated postoperative course during which he developed pulmonary emboli and a hydropneumothorax. In a follow-up CT scan 3 years later, a new primary lesion was found in the right lower lobe, which measured about 2 centimeters, and the biopsy demonstrated poorly differentiated squamous cell carcinoma. The PET scan demonstrated negative lymph nodes and there were no distant metastases. This second primary lung cancer was staged as a T1N0M0 squamous cell carcinoma. The patient had very poor lung function and was dyspneic with minimal exertion. His performance status was 2, and Dr. Kamaki began by discussing the option of primary radiation therapy.
By using very big field that will compromise further his lung function, however, by using stereotactic radiation therapy, which is pinpointed radiation treatment, without compromising his lung function, we can do a very quick pinpointed radiation treatment for this patient.
Did you actually go ahead and treat him?
Yes, that's what he wanted to have. And this stereotactic radiation therapy, we have to localize the tumor exactly where the tumor is. And when we do the planning, we have to do 4D CT. That means we have to make sure we don't miss tumor. So that we are checking the tumor motion depending on his breathing phase. We take maximum expiration and the maximum inhalation and then ask the patient to take very shallow breathing. So every phase, so the inhalation, expiration, we take one set of the CT scan as well as shallow free breathing. So when we take this planning CT scan, we don't miss the tumor. We take a minimal margin around 8 millimeter clinical. That means always cancer has some fingers around. So we take 8 millimeter margin, what we can see, that's why we call it gross target volume, 1.8 centimeter based on PET CT scan, and then take margin around 8 millimeter. And then every day we set it up like 3 millimeter margin around. But again, this stereotactic radiation therapy, we give very high dose of radiation therapy. So we do CT scan every time we give radiation treatment beforehand. And because even like a couple treatment, tumor start to shrink and the center of the tumor might shift. So we have to put the central axis right in the middle of the tumor. But we don't miss the tumor by doing that. So every time patient had radiation treatment, we call it stereotactic radiation treatment. Just like almost surgery, we give pinpointed radiation therapy by using like multiple 6 field of the treatment. The center of the tumor is right in the middle of the beam, but we are giving radiation treatment from 6 different field. So surrounding normal tissue like alveoli, spinal cord, and heart, and the liver, it will not be damaged by the radiation treatment.
So how did this man do?
He did very well, and he was very happy. The treatment was done every day within 40 minutes, and it was done from Tuesday through Friday, daily treatment. And he's fine. He's doing great about 6 months right now. No evidence of disease. And we have done this type of treatment more than 200 cases.
How much of a difference do you think it makes in terms of, you know, lung damage and functional disability to use this type of technique as opposed to a more traditional technique?
Well, the traditional technique, if the tumor is very big, it's very difficult to do this stereotactic radiation therapy just because each time we give very high dose of radiation. So the damage to the surrounding normal tissue might be a little bit more detrimental. So we usually do this stereotactic radiation therapy if the tumor is less than 3 centimeters. Some of the centers, they apply this type of treatment up to 4 centimeters. But the peripheral area, we can apply the type of stereotactic radiation treatment very easily. We look at very carefully the patient lung function afterwards. But so far, patient has not had much of the deterioration, such as DLCO, you know, perfusion study, which is most likely affected by radiation treatment, not much reduction just because of the size of the tumor. This case, we have to watch patient very carefully just because they do develop maybe another spot in the lung, which we can treat again by stereotactic radiation treatment. They can tolerate a couple stereotactic radiation treatment as long as it's not exactly the same spot.
Interesting. Do you think that this type of technique is generally available in the community radiation oncology setting?
Yes. These days, there are many places they are using this type of treatment. And now the operable patient, that means they have very good lung function. They can be operated. Patient would like to have this type of treatment because they do not have any pain, like post-operative complication like this patient had before. So they are demanding they would like to have treatment within 1 week without much of the pain. So the thoracic surgeons, they have some kind of threat. You know, all the patients, they used to have surgery. Now they are going to have stereotactic radiation treatment. So our thoracic surgeons are very open-minded. So we decided to do randomized study. That means exactly the same size of the tumor, but we are going to do a randomized study. That means the lymph nodes were well staged and no distant metastasis and no lymph node metastasis. And we are going to do a surgery versus stereotactic radiation therapy, if this will be more efficacious or equally efficacious compared to surgery.
That should be an interesting challenge. And when you said that, I was just thinking about the study in prostate cancer where they tried to do that. I think it was called the SPIRIT trial or something, and they weren't able to actually even accrue. It's a very tough kind of randomization. Is this something that would just be done at MD Anderson or nationally or what?
International.
Really?
Who's trial.
Who's going to head the effort?
Well, actually, the PI is a thoracic surgeon, Jack Ross, at the MD Anderson Cancer Center. I'm co-PI. And we had one patient already accrued. And actually, we have about 20 institutions like IRB approved. But there is some difficulty, as you mentioned. Some of the surgeons, they are very reluctant to open the trial to their centers. But this will be open in China, Japan, and also in the United States.
Who's the sponsoring organization for this study?
Well, that's the problem we had. We tried to go through NCI, and the NCI told us we don't have enough money to support this international trial. It cost, you know, like a couple million dollars. It is very difficult to support it.
Interesting. What kind of data do we have right now, just, you know, I guess, phase two data or follow-up data in terms of this technique?
We have a phase two trial through the RTOG, which shows excellent local control and survival. And the other place we have very long-term outcome, that's in Japan. They have started this type of treatment 10 years ago, and their 10-year survival is equivalent to surgical resection. So it's comparable if we give adequate dose of the radiation treatment. Those patients who are not pulmonary crippled, that means operable cases, but they wanted to have stereotactic radiation therapy, their outcome is like 85% in 5-year survival, and local control is like 90%.
So what is the actual entry criteria for this study?
The entry criteria, they have to have adequate lung function. They can be operable, so that means FEV1 has to be like a 1.5 liter or more. Of course, FEV1 has to be like 45% or more predicted value. So, you know, performance status, they have to have 0 or 1. They can have some weight loss, like less than 10%.
And what type of workup are you requiring, and how large can the tumor be?
They have to have PET CT, and also the size of the tumor has to be 4 centimeters or less. And they have to have mediastinoscopy. If the PET CT negative, they are supposed to have negative PET CT in the mediastinum, and then they have to get a mediastinoscopy or EVAS to confirm those lymph nodes were negative pathologically.
I wonder, you know, how aware people are of this option. I've got to say that it really wasn't out very much on my radar, and the way you describe it, it sounds like quite an interesting approach, particularly for, you know, older, more frail patients.
That's correct. The place where a lot of elderly patients are, like in Japan and certain places in the United States, they are very interested in it. Among the radiation oncologists, we see a lot of those elderly patients. They are requesting radiation treatment for the T1 or smaller T2 lesion. We are aware of this study. And also among the RTOG radiation therapy oncology group, we do know this stereotactic radiation treatment. Just because of this advancement of the diagnostic screening, the spiral CT scan started to pick up many patients' T1 lesion these days. So it's becoming more popular. We see the patients who are like 80 years old or 85 years old, they were found to have those tiny spots in the lung while they were getting some workup, even cancer of the prostate or had previous cancer of the head and neck, and they do get a kind of routine checkup, and they were found to have very small lesion in the lung.
I wish you good luck with this study. I remember when I first heard about the SPEAR trial on prostate cancer, and I was thinking, oh, I don't think this is going to happen. I mean, do you think this is really going to happen?
Well, we are having a little bit problem. It just activated. It's too early to say, but we are having some problem to get enough patients quickly.
I mean, I guess the other option would just be to try to enrich the data that's out there right now in terms of, you know, just in the results that are seen when this technique is used. And if I were a patient or your physician, you know, kind of looking out at this, and I saw, even though it wasn't a randomized trial, you know, indirect comparisons that look comparable to surgery, it'd be mighty tempting in an older patient.
That's correct. And that's exactly what we are doing while we are trying to get any patient on the randomized study. We do have phase 2 trial ongoing. This stereotactic radiation therapy is getting very popular. Like a brain tumor, we have like a gamma knife to treat a very small spot of like brain metastasis. So patient can get just one shot of treatment if the tumor is very small. And this has been really well recognized, very effective treatment all over the world. So now it's moving into the body like lung and sometimes hepatic metastasis. The patient would like to have this type of surgery. Well, we call it radiation type, using radiation treatment, but kind of almost removing tumor by the radiation treatment. So without opening the body, you know, they can do a treatment. And it's very attractive for elderly patients because, you know, nationwide and especially some countries, these elderly patients, they are getting more and more. Lifespan is prolonging, and we'll see those patients without any surgery, they would like to have treatment by radiation treatment.
Can you present your second case?
Sure. So this is a 51-year-old male who presented with fatigue and extreme weakness of the lower extremities. And he had a very difficult time to get up from the bed. He was found to have Eaton-Lambert syndrome. He went to see a family physician and he was sent to the neurologist. This patient is a smoker, but he never really smoked heavily, but he smoked one pack per day, at least like 35 years. And then he was found to have a small lesion in the lung, right hilar area, and he underwent to have bronchoscopy, and this was done by the CT-guided FNA. It did show a small cell lung cancer. And he had a PET CT scan, which showed 2 centimeter right hilar lymph node. And this SUV was 6 and a 4 centimeter subcarinal lymph node, which showed SUV 13. And he had MRI of the brain, which was negative, and the adrenal gland and the liver kidneys. These were all negative for the metastasis. And he did not have any bone marrow. His peripheral blood was fine. And the LDH was not elevated. So he was staged as limited stage small cell lung cancer. This patient originally, he used to play basketball and a very, very healthy guy. But when he started to have this weakness, he was told all different kind of diagnosis, Guillain-Barré syndrome and so on, and that's why he was sent to the neurologist. Interestingly, this neurologist did some antibody study, and he did have a HU-WHO antibody. But anyhow, this paraneoplastic syndrome kind of accelerated this diagnosis, because he did not have much of the shortness of breath or cough related to the lung cancer directly from the pulmonary lesion.
So I'm trying to remember the pathophysiology of Eaton-Lambert syndrome. It's a peripheral neuropathy?
Yeah, this is kind of antibody from the tumor attacking the neuromuscular septum. The patient gets a very weakness in the proximal muscle, mainly lower extremities. And once they start to move around, their strength comes back.
Right.
It's the opposite of the myasthenia gravis,
right,
which attacks around a small peripheral muscle, like a double vision in the evening. They get very weak in the evening, but once they rest, they are okay. So that's the other way, you know, different group of the muscle.
Did he have muscle wasting?
Yes, he did. When he came in, his wife was pushing this wheelchair because he had a weakness of the lower extremities. And that was not really shortness of breath, but he really had a muscle weakness of the lower extremities.
So what was the thinking in terms of treatment?
Well, staging-wise, he did not have any distant metastasis. But we used to say if somebody who has paraneoplastic syndrome from the small cell lung cancer, their outcome is very poor. So are we going to put this patient very aggressive chemo radiation treatment, or shall we start to just go ahead and give chemotherapy followed by consolidation of radiation therapy to the chest. But I realized his weakness of the muscle is coming from the cancer. But otherwise, his lung function was fine. And, you know, he really did not have any severe deteriorated, like a weight loss was less than 5%. So we decided to put this patient on the trial, which was starting concurrent chemo, etoposide, cisplatin, and the radiation treatment. And then he was treated 61.2 gray within 5 weeks, and he had a complete response, and his weakness disappeared, and he really started to walk around even around the 4th week of the radiation treatment. So he really had a great response to the chemo radiation.
And what's his current situation right now?
So this was like almost 5 years ago. He had complete response. We restaged him, PET CT scan, bronchoscopy, and all the cancer disappeared. So he had a prophylactic cranial irradiation. If any patient who have complete response, that's the most frequent place cancer grows within 1 or sometimes 2 years. So we decided to give him a prophylactic cranial irradiation, which he had 2.5 gray times 10. He tolerated treatment very well, and he has like 3 sons, and he plays basketball together, and he has gained weight, and he looks healthier than anybody around him. He's back to work, and he looks just great.
So can he or you detect any type of mental or neurologic dysfunction as a result of the cranial radiation?
No. He underwent to have neuropsychological testing in our institution, and according to our protocol through the RTOG, they have to have neuropsychological testing if anybody who had severe dementia or some alcohol-related encephalitis. We don't put those patients on this PCI, but he did not have any of those. So we put this patient on the trial, which was randomized high dose and a regular dose. High dose was 36 gray, going 2 gray times 18, and the other standard dose was 2.5 gray times 10, and he was randomized to get the standard dose. But he does not have any neurocognitive deficiency. He has incredible memory. He remembers all the things. And we repeat this neurocognitive testing every 6 months. And he has not had any deterioration. And his memory is just incredible. He remembers all our names and our physician assistant and our nurses' names, and when he had the treatment, he remembers everything.
What do we know about the neurocognitive effects of radiation therapy in general, and what are the variables in terms of the type of treatment or the type of patient?
Basically, the patients who had some paraneoplastic syndrome, sometimes that's related to the cancer itself. Once they are cured, like this patient, their cognitive deficiency disappears. We have had some barrier when we had this prophylactic cranial irradiation many years ago because they were receiving concurrent chemotherapy at the same time. We did not know exactly when we are supposed to give PCI. You know, if patient get like a vincristine and the radiation therapy to the brain, that will affect their neurofunction, and we don't do that anymore. And also, the patients who have any progressive disease in the chest or any other distant place, they don't get any benefit from PCI because, you know, they will have deterioration anyhow. And doing this very accurate MRI of the brain, and if they don't have any brain metastasis, this PCI will benefit, and usually without any concurrent chemotherapy and the adequate dose of the radiation treatment, they do not get any damage to the neuron.
Let's finish out by talking about your 62-year-old man.
So this is a 62-year-old male who presented with chest pain, and his chest x-ray showed left hilar mass, and the bronchoscopy was done. Although this was negative, there was no endobronchial lesion, and CT-guided FNA of the left lower lobe lesion, it was also non-diagnostic. And then CT-guided fine needle aspirate of the left hilar mass showed non-small cell lung cancer. And the PET CT scan showed a 4.5 centimeter hilar mass, SUV 13.4, and 1.3 centimeter paratracheal lymph node on the same side, and then a prevascular lymph node with SUV 10.7, and the patient was staged as stage 3A, T1, N2, M0, no distant metastasis. Patient did have an MRI of the brain, which was negative.
So what was the thinking at that point?
Well, at that time, we always evaluate if this patient can go through surgery or not. However, the patient N2 disease was not great location, prevascular area. We discussed the surgeon if he can be operable case. He did have a MI previously, and also if he has to go through surgery, most likely he needs pneumonectomy. And he was not really the candidate to go through the pneumonectomy because of his slightly limited lung function study. And N2 disease, what we usually do is to give induction chemotherapy followed by surgery. And we have had previous randomized trial N2 disease, and the patient get the concurrent chemo radiation 45 gray with Vindicin and cisplatin followed by surgery. But anybody who had to go through pneumonectomy, they had like 20% of the mortality after the surgery. So the worst thing to do is concurrent chemo radiation followed by pneumonectomy. This was compared with chemo radiation alone for those N2 patients. And the bottom line of that randomized study, there was no difference. However, those patients who did have pneumonectomy, their outcome was poor because the complication rate was very high. If any patient who had just lobectomy, there was a little bit better local control by going through chemo radiation followed by lobectomy. However, there was no significant difference, the overall. So this patient, we decided to do just chemo radiation therapy alone rather than surgery. This patient went to a phase 2 trial we had through RTOG. This was cetuximab, that's an EGFR inhibitor with Taxol-Cabo, and he has had 63 gray in 35 fractions daily radiation treatment, and the carbotaxol was given weekly, and he started to take this C225 staximab up front 1 week, loading dose, and then had weekly staximab 7 weeks. And he really did very well, this treatment. And we just presented at the ASCO last year of our trial, 87 patients entered to this trial, which showed the best median survival stage 3 patients and a good performance status. Their median survival 23 months, which is much better compared to previous phase 3 trial, RTOG 9410. The best arm was 17 months median survival. And this cetuximab and paclitaxel, carbo and radiation therapy, 2-year survival is 50%. So this is the best we have had among the stage 3 non-small cell lung cancer. And the toxicity was really mild, grade 3 or 4. Pneumonitis was only 9% compared to like 30%, which we used to have. However, for this trial, we did RTOG-0324, cetuximab and paclitaxel, carbo and radiation. We had to use 3D conformal radiation therapy. And I am certain this sophisticated radiation therapy technique contributed less toxicity to the lung. And also, like esophagitis was only 9% grade 3 and 4 compared to like 20% previous studies. So we are very encouraged by adding EGFR inhibitor in addition to Taxol, Carbo, and the radiation treatment, which became a standard treatment nationwide in the United States for the good performance status stage 3 patients.
I know there's a lot of interest in this, particularly because of the precedent with head and neck cancer. Is there a phase 3 study?
Yes. Based on our great phase 2 trial, the outcome was excellent and minimal toxicity. Now we are open phase 3 study, which requires about 700 patients, and they will be randomized with and without cetuximab. And the control arm is just the Taxol, Carbo, and radiation therapy.
What do you think about the possibility of utilizing this strategy outside a protocol setting, someone who's not eligible or can't participate using cetuximab off study?
Right now, using cetuximab without any protocol, it is a little bit difficult to do. We are not using routinely. Some of the patients, they do request, you know, they would like to get this cetuximab because phase 2 trial looks great. But we are not using cetuximab. This is an IV, and rather than using cetuximab, it is much easier using PO, like Tarceva. This is a EGFR tyrosine kinase inhibitor. They can take through the mouth. And this is a very effective drug if the patient has EGFR mutation. We have seen those patients never smoked, and women, especially Asian population, they do get complete response by just Tarceva, this EGFR tyrosine kinase inhibitor. So selected group of the patients, they do get incredible response by using this EGFR tyrosine kinase inhibitor. And more, I think the patients, they would like to get the PO through the mouth rather than coming to the hospital to get the IV. So cetuximab, we still have some difficulty to use routinely, even they request it. So right now, we are just using based on a randomized study.
In colon cancer, of course, there's been a lot of interest in KRAS.
Right.
I don't know that I've seen KRAS studies in head and neck cancer related to cetuximab radiation. Have there been any there, or have there been any in these chemoradiation patients with lung cancer?
Well, obviously, colon cancer, like a GI, that's adeno-CA, and obviously this Avastin works. And for the lung cancer, we are using Avastin. There was a randomized study done, and Avastin works for the adenocarcinoma. But anybody who has squamous and, you know, hemoptysis, we don't use this Avastin because there was a death related to the severe hemoptysis bleeding by using Avastin for the lung cancer patients. The head and neck, these are squamous cell carcinoma, and, you know, cetuximab, it works, but Avastin, we are not using at present time. We do have some mixed EGFR inhibitor as well as VEGF inhibitor trial ongoing. So we'll find out if that works this is a more adjuvant therapy setup, those very locally advanced cancer of the head and neck, but they operated and had a positive lymph node. They are randomizing patients to get the radiation therapy with and without ZD6474, which is a EGFR and a VEGF inhibitor. I think it's very important to recognize the patient's toxicity and the benefit. You know, we are treating human beings. We would like to make the cancer goes away, but we cannot kill the patient based on or due to the treatment. And more, we are developing more sophisticated radiation treatment and just adding chemo and more chemo and radiation, that's not the answer. By putting some biomarker study and giving more biological-based treatment without giving toxicity, that's the way to go to cure cancer patients.